Hi, everyone, and welcome to Focus Forward, an executive function podcast where we explore the challenges and celebrate the wins you'll experience as you change your life through working on improving your executive function skills. I'm your host, Hannah Choi.
I'm so glad you're here for this conversation because today we are diving into a topic that I think is going to be very personal for many of you and is definitely very close to home for me, the intersection of ADHD, perimenopause or menopause, and executive function skills. As a midlife woman with ADHD who is actively navigating perimenopause myself, I can say this season of life is no joke. The brain fog, the memory slips, the emotional intensity, it can feel like the executive function skills we've spent years building suddenly fall out from under us. As you'll hear me ask, do I even have a brain anymore? It's a rough time. Ugh. And until recently, so much of this was happening in the dark because women's bodies and brains simply haven't been studied with the care and the depth that they deserve. And for too long, that has left millions and millions of women confused, misdiagnosed, and feeling very alone. My guest today, Kristen Baird Goldman, is a licensed mental health therapist who specializes in working with neurodivergent women, especially those over 40. She brings such clarity and compassion to this whole messy thing of hormones, ADHD, and mental health. We talked about why so many women go undiagnosed until midlife, how perimenopause can amplify ADHD symptoms in ways that can feel terrifying at times, what's actually happening in the brain and the body during this time, and most importantly, how we can advocate for ourselves in a medical system that was not made for us and still has a long way to go. I'm so relieved and honestly so grateful to see this topic finally getting more attention in the news, in research, and all over social media. I mean, maybe it's just my Instagram feed, but I feel like I'm seeing weighted vests on women out for walks in my neighborhood and ads for protein this and protein that way more than ever before. The conversations are growing, the awareness is catching up, and even though there's tons more work to be done, this change does matter. And it's heartening to see. The more we learn, the better we can support women who are living through these changes every single day. And before we jump in, if there are any men listening, thank you so much for being here. Please keep listening. Truly, truly means so much that you're here. Your willingness to understand these experiences makes a real difference in the lives of your partners, friends, colleagues, family members, even the women you pass on the street. Kristen and I get real today about being a woman. So thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. Let's get on with the show. Hey, Kristen, thanks so much for joining me on Focus Forward.
Hi, Hannah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And we were just talking before we started recording about how, about Southern California, the delights of living there. So you are in Los Angeles.
Correct. Yes.
Great.
It is, I think many of us have a love-hate relationship with Los Angeles.
Yes. When I lived there, I had the same.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yep. All right. So today we're going to talk about women's mental health, women's health. Can you maybe just talk a little bit about, your work and how you kind of got into supporting women in all the things that come up for being a woman.
Yes. So, I've been a licensed mental health therapist for over 15 years. I specialize in the neurodivergent population, predominantly ADHD, high functioning autism. And over the years of working with that entire population, I gravitated towards women because in addition to being a mental health therapist, I became certified in integrative mental health, which means that, I'm looking at the whole person, the whole body, their neurology and their biology, because they're connected. You can't look at the brain without looking at the body and vice versa. So in my experience throughout this journey going through perimenopause and menopause, particularly as an individual with ADHD, and learning more about the body, I discovered, oh my God, science is nowhere near caught up to figuring out women's bodies and women's minds, for that matter. Most medical science is done and researched on the male body. And I had a horrific perimenopause period. And, you know, my original focus coming out of graduate school was pre and postnatal experiences. And I was a late diagnosed ADHD female, as many of us are, particularly being a Gen Xer.
Same.
And, you know, everything just sort of lined up to that. It is, you know, something very personal and near and dear to me. It's in my family, both sides, my husband, my side. But more importantly, the more I became connected to with learning about the body itself, and the research and the studying I was doing, and how little practitioners really understand the female body, I was very fortunate to work with a functional doctor, and a functional MD, you know, looks at the root, what's causing this. Not, let's not put a Band-Aid on the symptom. Let's uncover and run labs to discover what's really going on. And that working with her for so many years also led me to become an integrative mental health clinician, because so many unanswered questions that I've had for decades got answered. And it was very empowering, and I loved that. And I wanted other women to have the same experience. So now, after 15 years, you know, my specialization and focus is women over 40. My practice works with kids and teens, but I predominantly, my main focus is women. I do see some men, but, you know, I want to help women. I want to be that link between them and a practitioner or whatnot, to help them know what questions to ask, what kind of practitioner to look for. And, you know, we're literally just scratching the surface of women's gynecological health, right? You know, I want to be a part of that advocation for women in health, particularly brain health.
I love it. Well, I'm so glad to have you here today. I
Thank
just
you.
saw that they finally have a crash test dummy based on the female body. So maybe the percentage of us dying in accidents will go down. And so I was going to ask you, why do you think that menopause and perimenopause and all of these things are so under-discussed, misunderstood? But I kind of think that that's one, another podcast conversation, a very long conversation for
Very
another
long.
podcast. but I also think that anybody listening probably knows. Like, we know why. I
Yeah,
mean, I
we
don't
know
want
why.
to assume, but I think that we know why. And so let's move on to, you know, to what we can look for and what we can do. Are you cool with that?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So what are some of the emotional, cognitive, and behavioral changes that you're hearing from your patients? Like, what do people come to you, you know, come to you, and what are they blurt out when they walk into your room? Help, I need help. What are they looking help with for help with?
You know, I mostly, as I mentioned before, people are seeking me out to get help with ADHD and women's issues predominantly. A lot of my clients are what are have been labeled high achieving ADHDers, or high functioning on the spectrum, or both. A lot of the times women have come to me misdiagnosed with other mental health conditions when, so I can't tell you how many times I've ruled out bipolar, borderline, major depressive disorder, anxiety. Yes, you know, neurodivergent population can have those alongside of their neurodivergence, right? But you know, it's medical trauma when someone has been medicated for bipolar 2 for 10 years and then find out, oh my God, that was wrong. And it was ADHD, basically. And that's really significant for people. I have found that adults who get diagnosed, women particularly, and men who get diagnosed later in life, there's some complex developmental trauma there underneath, right? Years and decades of being misunderstood and nobody knowing, even yourself not really understanding the inconsistencies. Why am I really good here? And why can't I do this simple thing here, right?
Yes. Why?
And so it is, and then looking at the whole picture, it is not, particularly ADHD is not, it's neurobiological. I myself am of the camp that I don't believe this is a psychiatric mental health disorder. This is a neurobiological condition. Doesn't even belong in the DSM, which is our diagnostic manual. Because it affects the brain and the body. When we run labs, we s consistently see the same deficiencies in the vitamin and mineral panel and the gut microbiome across the board in the ADHD population. So I think by the time someone has come to me, they've exhausted often the medical practice that didn't understand them. And hopefully, you know, my job is part of like shining light on who they really are and where can we make the changes.
I'm so curious, what kind of deficiency, vitamin deficiencies are people showing in
Oh,
ADHD?
yeah. So, vitamin B panel is often low. D3 is low. There's a copper zinc iron ratio that is off. We may have our iron numbers might be good, but ferritin is low, which is how we store iron.
Interesting.
Magnesium is a tough one to test, but I mean, the second after I see someone one time, I'm like, let's get you on magnesium if you're not already. It's just so beneficial whether you're ADHD or not. And, you know, there is a connection to what's called the MTHFR gene variant. It's genetically, we're seeing more and more connections to ADHD and certain genes being expressed in those with ADHD. And this one is a big one in the entire neurodivergent population. And it's responsible for how we metabolize and absorb our vitamins and minerals through foods and medications and vitamins, and how we detoxify. And the problem is we don't methylate, we don't absorb very well, and we also don't detoxify naturally. So we're
Interesting.
not getting rid of the toxins, and that's causing havoc on the gut and the microbiome system. And
So,
that's
because
why we
I,
see that.
yeah, I was going to say, I've heard so much that people with ADHD often have digestion issues.
Yes. Yep. And, you know, particularly for us high achievers, a lot of us are wired to live at a chronic stress level. Like our nervous system's up here. And we did that at a young age to learn how to
Oh,
survive,
yeah.
right? So we need super stress in order to think, oh, now I'm stressed. But we've been living at that stress level for such a long time that that also is contributing to the gut and the body and whatnot. And so I help a lot of my clients who are, you know, have great careers and they love their jobs and are successful, but reach a certain age where it's like, I can't operate the same way I used to anymore because that chronic stress is now taking a physical effect on the body. We don't notice the mental, but then we do start to notice the physical.
Yeah, yep. So, speaking of, how does it impact our executive functioning? I mean, this podcast is all about executive functioning. So, I mean, I can answer this question, but I want to hear from you. What do you see in your clients, that are like, how does it show up with their executive function skills?
Well, it is particularly as we get older, we know with ADHD, a large component of the condition is an executive function management. The system is off, right? It's not wiring and firing in the way we need it to be. But it's so different for every person. Somebody might have time blindness, somebody might not, right? Someone might be extremely organized on the outside, but internally their thoughts are racing a mile a minute. and so I will assess their executive function. Just one of the first things I do after intake is look at the executive function system.
Cool.
Because people can have executive function deficiency and not have ADHD. So I
Yes.
always want to double check and rule
Yes.
that out first, right? Because some people, it's rare, but have come to me with an ADHD diagnosis and in fact did not truly have ADHD. But particularly for women and women over 45, or when you start to hit the perimenopause stage, it impacts your cognition so significantly. I have women come to me saying, I think I might have early dementia or early Alzheimer's. And it is so scary because that all of the strategies we've learned to put in place aren't working anymore when we hit that stage. And if they're in early perimenopause and they don't know they're in early perimenopause, it's so scary. Your memory, it's the first thing they noticed is right,
Big
is
time. Who are
really
you?
hard. As I'm someone even through menopause, word finding gets more difficult. Yeah,
And I was
I
gonna
mean,
say, like for me, memory and word recall have been something that I've struggled with my entire life. And like even when I was young, I remember struggling with that. And so now throw in, perimenopause, and it's like, do I even have a brain? I don't think I have a brain.
yes, it's so true.
Yeah.
And then you combine that with emotion dysregulation is off the charts, right? You are angry, you are annoyed, frustration tolerance is even smaller than it was before if you have ADHD. So self-regulation, all of it becomes like someone just blew it up on you. And it impacts you and it impacts those around you, right? I mean, jokingly, my husband during those years was like, do I need to move out for the next year? And I'm like, no, but I think I might need to move out for the next
I
year.
remember somebody saying to me once that she wanted to kill her husband for 7 years, and then once she made it through, she was like, "Oh, I actually like him again." She said, "He didn't change."
Yes, that's exactly
Yeah,
right.
yeah, yeah.
And God, it's so hard. I mean, my transition also started to overlap with my daughter's transition into teen years, right? And that's a whole other story. So yes, it is an enormous impact when estrogen drops, memory, dopamine drops, and it's significant. And when testosterone and progesterone, when we're in the perimenopause stage, it's like it's literally doing this,
Her
right? Before
and
it finally drops.
Kristen is moving up and down, like how would
Yes.
you describe that? Like up and down, up and down, up and down,
Up
up and
and
down.
down, like this like erratic wave of going up and down, up and down. When we're normally cycling, it's a slow curve, bell curve, right? And then dips. But in perimenopause, it is like looking at a rapid heartbeat, and then it just drops completely. And I think that has been a lot of the unknown is how connected our hormone system is to our brain hormone system.
Yeah.
And so that's why it greatly impacts the executive function system.
And then additionally, I know it impacts like your sleep. And then so poor sleep directly impacts executive functioning for anybody, regardless of your gender, your age. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is PMS on steroids.
Yeah.
Basically, right? And we even know during women in their normal cycling years, particularly with ADHD, if I'm working with someone still in their cycling years, it is teaching them to understand that dip. You know, while it is less significant for some women, a lot of women with ADHD seem to have PMDD and PCOS. And not sure what the main root behind that is. But so they're already struggling in just through a normal cycle. And it impacts the executive function system that 2 weeks and week leading up.
Yeah. So I had to have a hysterectomy 5 years ago because of a very large uterine fibroid. And so I have the added confusion of not knowing if I'm not getting my period regularly anymore. And so it just adds to it because I have less data to collect on, like, you know, what I'm going through. And so I know there's lots of women out there who are yeeting the ute, I've heard people say lately, or have to yeet the ute, have to have a hysterectomy for whatever reason. And so there's that too. When we can't, you know, when I've gone and talked with a doctor about what I think are perimenopause symptoms, they always say, well, you know, is your cycle irregular? I'm like, well, I don't know. So I don't have that. And I never was like a super PMS-y person. So I can't like rely on that either. So it's really tricky. It's tricky
It
being
is.
a woman.
Yes.
It
Yes.
really is.
I just was telling my 13-year-old, you know, she was asking me questions about premenstrual stuff. And she's like, is this normal 2 weeks before you? And I would describe things to her. And she's looking at me like, what the hell? Like, what? This is not. And I said, yeah, I don't know. You know, for anyone, whatever higher power there is, there's definitely not a feminine energy there because we got hit really hard.
We really did. I remember when my daughter got her period, I said to her, I mean, first I like was happy because, okay, she's like becoming a woman and growing up. But then I think I said to her, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Now you have to deal with this for the rest of your life. And I always had really like awful periods. And I'm just like, I'm so sorry.
I know.
Yeah. And it's like, the sisterhood is wonderful and being a woman is wonderful. And also, like, what the hell?
What the hell?
Like you said, what the hell? Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, to add insult to injury, let's put you through all this for perimenopause and menopause.
Yes.
If there are any men listening, thank you so much for listening and treat the women in your lives well because
oh,
they need it.
please.
Treat the people who have a uterus or used to have a uterus well, please, please.
But you know, I do believe it's what makes us really strong.
Yeah,
Right?
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and look, we're like laughing about it, right? And you and I are on either side of the country. We've never met in person, but we're having this like completely connected understanding of the experience of being a person with a uterus.
Yes.
And with a whole, you know, system. It's just, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing.
It is a whole thing.
So what do you want other people to understand about this, you know, phase of life for, you know, people who are going through perimenopause and menopause?
It's temporary.
Mm.
Right? You know,
that's
I
good
mean,
for everyone to remember.
Yes, it is something that I teach my clients a lot. You know, my big philosophy in my therapeutic practice is teaching my clients to lean in. You know, we have to be okay not being okay all the time. And particularly those of us who are neurodivergent our comfort tolerance muscle is smaller, right? And so we tend to be more impacted by things that are uncomfortable because of our neurobiology. Yeah. We're not making the dopamine and norepinephrine and serotonin. It's not cycling through like it does for people who are not neurodivergent, right? So that just do it attitude literally can't happen all the time for us. And so it is understanding that it is okay to get uncomfortable, that it is temporary. When I was an intern, I worked in substance abuse facility, and there was a term called riding the wave or urge surfing. And I think it applies in general to any level of discomfort we're experiencing, right? It doesn't, it's not just connected to addiction. It is understanding that as humans, we actually can tolerate quite a bit. But our mind wants to tell us we can't, right? And so I'll do what's called the ice cube test with a client to see how they respond to a temporary discomfort. And it's like you don't tell them how many minutes they're going to hold it, and they get uncomfortable and want to drop it. And then when you do tell them how many minutes they're going to hold it, they can tolerate it because they know the end is coming, right? And that's why I always encourage a lot of my clients, do yoga or Pilates, because it's teaching you that mind-body practice of being okay, of temporarily being uncomfortable. And that it's not about how flexible you are, how strong you are. It is literally training your brain and your body at the same time to be okay with a level of discomfort that you know is going to end at some point.
I love that. I just, and actually next week's episode, so for anyone listening, it's going to be the previous episode that we just dropped. I spoke with Kimberly Glazer Leonte, and she talked about treatment for OCD and how so much of it is that, like, tolerating the discomfort and leaning into that. So you can learn that, you can tolerate it.
We can do the hard things.
We can do the hard things. I mean, you see that like on bumper stickers and signs, but it's true. It's true.
It is. Yes, it is true. Yeah. You know, when people say, when they're looking at the martial arts and they're like, how are they breaking a board with their head? It is literally that, right? They've trained the mind to not notice the pain for that period of time.
I do yoga. I go to yoga once a week. And sometimes I don't want to be there. It's not that I don't like the class. I just don't want to be there. My mind doesn't want to be there. My body doesn't want to be there, but I know that I'm going to benefit from it. And so I'm always like, you can do this. You can tolerate this discomfort. And of course, like 10 minutes into it, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so glad I'm here.
Yes, the 600 second rule, we call that.
Ah.
We can do anything for 600 seconds.
I like it. I like it. That's cool. Yeah, I used to do a lot of kickboxing, actually, speaking of martial arts. And I used that a lot, like, you know, they would really challenge us to do these like really seemingly impossible tasks, like 1,000 jab crosses or whatever. And then you just do it one by one. You get there.
Yes.
Yeah. It's uncomfortable. Yeah. But you get there. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that's great advice. I love that. Applies to many areas of life.
Yes.
Or maybe all areas of life. So do you, what kind of impacts, I mean, this is, we touched on this a little bit, but when people come in and speak with you, how is this impacting their relationships with their, you know, maybe with their teens, with their partners, with their friends? Like, I know I already feel bad about how forgetful I am, but I have a lot of strategies that I use, but they do, you know, sometimes I still forget things. And so I, I know that that can add some stress to the relationships that I have with people. So what do people come in and talk about?
Yeah. So this is one of the primary reasons why a male will walk through my door is because their partner, is almost demanding it at that point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it isn't, and in any situation when I'm working with adult clients who are struggling, if their executive function system or neurodivergent traits are impacting the relationship, it is not only working with the individual, but it's working with the couple, and it's educating the non-neurodivergent partner about their about the ADHD and or high functioning autism, right? It is having them understand this isn't intentional, right? The fact that particularly, you know, I see a lot in my practice, what I call mixed marriage, where one person is ADHD and one person is high functioning autism. And a lot of the time you will get, and I don't want to stereotype or generalize, but a lot of people on the spectrum who are high functioning tend to be very verbose and they explain things in great detail. And when you're doing that with someone who's ADHD, right, now the working memory is not working anymore, right? And they're kind of, they're impatient at times and are like, oh my God, just give me the Reader's Digest version right, right now. You know, like sum it up in a bullet point because my brain can't handle all that information because it's also taking in all the information that's going on around me through my other sensory parts of my system, right? So it's not that we don't want to listen to someone. It's not that we can't, it's not even that we can't pay attention. The problem is we're paying attention to everything all at the same time. And we're also doing a to-do list in our head and a million that hamster
singing
wheel.
Some songs.
Yes, singing the song we just heard in the radio, right? None of this is intentional. And a lot of it is not anything we can do really about other than have a system with our partner in saying like, okay, I need to give you a signal right now that this is too much information for me, right? It's not that I'm not interested, but I am going to look like I'm zoning out. And that is what I hear a lot is that if there is a non-neurodivergent partner, they feel like their partner, they feel lonely. They feel neglected. They feel no one is listening to them. A lot of us, those of us with ADHD take great pride in our alone time because it's how we decompress and disconnect when we can. And we are very much a here and now, like whatever's put in front of us right now is what the focus is, right? And it isn't, again, it's not intentional, but it is when the focus is there, we have to take it in that moment and apply as much as we can to getting the thing done. And it doesn't always match with the timing of our partner or family members. So it is educating the entire family system and your friends about, look, this is a real condition, right? That affects where I place my attention. And sometimes I can be a fantastic active listener, and sometimes I can't. And I don't always know when that's going to be.
Yes, so true.
So it is, I think, when the others are educated and can have some level of sympathy for it and an understanding that this is a very real condition, then I think things wind up getting better. And it's also about my clients learning so much of what they can do, because many come in the door thinking, well, I can't do that. I can't, history tells me I can't do that. And a lot of the time we unwind that and find out that that's not true. It's just developing a different set of tools.
I love that. And yeah, that education
for others and for ourselves. It just really, I mean, so I think if I were to like sum up every lesson that I've learned from every single podcast episode interview I've ever done, is that knowledge is power. Like when you once you learn something, then you can make good decisions and or
Yes.
more confident decisions anyway, and really understand everything. So that's great.
I preach that to my clients
Yeah.
all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, it is definitely one of those things, particularly for the neurodivergent population, we're curious learners inherently, right? So they, when you can, when you, when someone can work with a neurodivergent informed clinician, you will learn so much that will empower you.
Yeah,
And I think
absolutely.
that's really important.
Yeah, and so, you know, if you're listening and you don't have someone that you're working with, it's okay to interview them and to ask
Yes.
them, like, or if you're looking on Psychology Today or whatever your resources, make sure that they have the experience with the, you know, whatever you're looking for support with. It's okay to ask that. And it's okay not to go with someone if they say no.
Yes. Yes. And hopefully they are saying no. It's unfortunate. ADHD
Yeah,
is
right.
becoming a big business right now, and everyone's throwing it on there, right? And so there are a lot of specific questions one should ask to try and find out if, if they are. And hey, if your clinician even has it, even better, because you will
Yes.
feel seen and heard.
Yeah, I mean I do share with my clients that I have ADHD and they and it they often will say, "Oh, it's nice to hear that it's not just me."
Yes. Yes.
I totally get it. Yep. Oh, maybe you could write down some of the questions that people should ask when they are interviewing, and maybe we can stick that in the show notes if
Oh,
you wouldn't
absolutely. Yeah, I would
mind
love to do
just
that.
writing a few of those down. Great, that'd be great. Cool. All right. So, what any let's well let's talk about in addition to working with, you know, a doctor and a therapist, what else is helpful for people with ADHD, maybe ADHD plus perimenopause, plus menopause? You know, what kinds of things are going to make the biggest impact?
self-care, self-management. It is something I teach my clients that you have to, it's really important to check in with yourself every day. And for all the reasons I stated earlier about our minds are in so many places. And so many clients feel like, I feel like I'm just constantly catching up all the time. Like I'm behind the ball. Even if they're not, it's like this race against time.
And it's like
And
a habit to think that way,
yes.
right?
Yes, very much so. And for some of us, we get dopamine from that, right? Like it is the like, let me set up this scenario to where I feel like my back's up against the wall, right? To get me motivated to get this done. And then you're so depleted that you don't really take in the fact that it's done. And then you just go to the next thing. So it, but more importantly, I think managing anything, ADHD, anything is about checking in with yourself and creating a regular practice. I teach my clients what we call in the mindfulness world HALT.
Oh, yeah, we use that too. Great.
And it really helps them gain a perspective of, am I hungry or hangry, right? Am I anxious or angry? Am I lonely? Or low, am I tired or troubled is what I teach my clients. But if we're not checking in on that, it builds up and then it gets to a point where we crash or we're depleted or a variety of things. And we can so easily be the person taking care of everyone else, particularly women, right? We are taking care of the family system and not often ourselves. And it's not about, when I say self-care or management, yes, it's good to do the massage and the nails and the hair, but that's not the
No.
same, right? It is really going within and checking in on your brain and your body on a daily basis of where am I right now today? And I know I had this uber productivity period for the last 2 days and burned the candle at both ends. Yet I'm looking at my calendar and I see that I have this social event or this thing coming up. And we just kind of go. And then we get sick or we crash or people think it's depression when it's really depletion. And so if we're not checking in, like, did I sleep well the last 2 nights? If we're not paying attention to that, then we're not going to manage any of this successfully.
Yeah, I really love pushing, not pushing, but continuing the conversation about this kind of self-care, because I feel like there's so much, well, first of all, there's a big business around self-care, and you can't see
Yes.
me, but I'm doing quotation marks, and that's the scented candles and the fuzzy robe and the get a massage. And for a lot of people, including myself, there's a lot of guilt around that. Like if I were to go get a massage, I would feel guilty for spending the money, guilty for taking the time, guilty for like all the things, and for not appreciating it enough in the moment. I mean, it's ridiculous. So I just like don't get massages. Probably should, but I know. But continuing that conversation loud and clear about how paying attention to ourselves, that metacognitive thinking, self-awareness, and how important it is, and to notice, like you said, oh yeah, well, I didn't get enough sleep the last 2 days, or or yeah, my child is sick, and so that's stressing me out, or something different is going on, so no wonder, and having some compassion. And it's and it drives me crazy when I hear people saying, oh, that's you're just going easy on yourself, or you're just, it's a cop out, or you're not fill whatever it is, fill in the blank. And I just think, no, that's the conversation that we need to continue to have, because that's really the only way that you can find this balance of not balance, I don't even know if balance is the right word, but just to find what you need, you have to pay attention. Like we said, knowledge is power, even about ourselves.
Yes. I mean, it is Dr. Mark Hyman, who's a famous functional doctor. He posted something this week that I found so fascinating. Particularly in the integrative functional medical world, we talk so much about diet and sleep and exercise, right? Those are the three pillars of taking care of oneself. But at the end of the day, it is more than that, right? And all of the studies they've done in the blue zone areas of the country, which is where people live, over 100. Yes, they have a Mediterranean diet. They're constantly moving their bodies and they're sleeping well. But in addition to the social connection that they have, right? There isn't chronic state of stress occurring. And as I said earlier, many of us are living in that high octane nervous system place, right? No matter how much you exercise, no matter how much you eat well, no matter how much sleep you get, it's not enough if your nervous system is still that operating at that high survival state, right? It is learning to bring it down, because so many of us have set that as our homeostasis. And so longevity, a quality long life, is reducing that level of chronic stress that many of us aren't even aware is there.
I was just going to say, but you have to notice that you're
Exactly.
experiencing it. I had an interesting experience lately where I used to struggle with a lot of anxiety, and the way that it showed up in my body, which I never noticed until maybe
I don't know, 10 years ago, was I would like get a stomach ache and just kind of have this like vibration feeling in my body, like this tension. And I've done a lot of work on it over the past few years. And semi-recently, I had a day where my husband was traveling, he was flying, and my daughter was going into the city to a concert by herself with a friend, and it came back, and I realized that I had stopped feeling that all the time. I needed it to come back for me to realize, hey, you have figured this out. And I was so proud of myself. Like, hey, cool. I really have that work that I've been doing is paying off, but I didn't even notice it. Like, I mean,
Yes.
I noticed it in some aspects of my life, but I didn't notice it in this, like, how my body felt.
It's so true because when we're dealing with something like anxiety, which I suffered from, like when it's gone, we don't pay attention to it. You're exactly right. Until someone either asks, right? Or you might get a little hint of a return of it, and then you're like, wait a minute, I haven't had this experience in a really long time. I totally forgot that I was an anxious
Like
person.
all the time.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. I know. It is, yeah, knowledge is power, but you have to know that you've known it. You have to know that
Yeah,
you're learning
awareness.
it. Yeah,
Knowledge and
awareness. A
awareness is power.
knowledge and awareness. Ah, the new slogan.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, well, thanks so much for this conversation. I would love to talk all day.
I know. I'm
Yeah,
like, can I
so
cancel my clients
I
today?
know, right? That's how I feel the same way. So, just quickly, how can we advocate for ourselves? I mean, one is by, those interviewing people and feeling okay with saying no to someone that, that isn't maybe not going to be the best fit. How else can we advocate for ourselves in appointments, in our regular lives?
I think it is in particularly with the medical professionals and providers, do your homework.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, as much as I complain about social media and the internet and on, and I don't mean do your homework on social media, but use the technology that we have to find some information to go in with,
Yeah.
right? Like take a self review of what is it you are dealing with, what is it you want to talk about. Always go to a doctor's appointment with a list because we
Yes.
get there, the white coat syndrome effect occurs, we forget everything that we prepared, even in the car ride over. It's hard because if in the medical profession, and it really isn't their fault, but if they're working with insurance, they get like 15, 20 minutes, and you already are feeling rushed the second you walk in the door. But whip out your paper anyway,
Yes, yes,
right?
yes.
The doctor will appreciate it because they don't have their time is getting shortened because of the insurance company. God bless you. And so it is. It is doing your due diligence ahead of time, right? We can't expect that the doctor's going to know everything about us. They're not mind readers. So we have to go in there armed with information. And if you're looking for a new doctor, look up what it is you want to get from that doctor. What is their background? What is their training? Particularly for the neurodivergent population, you're going to want somebody that's informed. And yes, it's not always listed on their profile. Ask around, ask people, get on Facebook or LinkedIn, and ask other neurodivergent people in your area who they can recommend. But it is definitely it's important because this is the person that you are seeking support from, right? And if it's, don't be afraid if it's not the right fit, don't go back.
Yeah,
Don't continue.
gonna hurt their feelings. And
Yes,
if you
yeah.
do hurt their feelings, then they probably weren't a good fit for you anyway.
Exactly, right? And it is not, it's you and your health. What's more important at the end of the day? And it's an investment in yourself. So, have your questions, be ready. And that will also show your provider that you're serious about your health, right? And they're going to want to be a part of that, your healthcare team, because they know that you're someone who is going to listen to them. And that's with, you know, any medical professional, and particularly a mental health professional, any coach, anyone, you know, that's really important. Even when you're looking for a job, right? We prepare for the interviews so much. It's like, we need to do the same thing about our health.
Yeah. That's great. Do you have any last message, any last parting words, what you want to leave everybody with?
Well, I said it earlier, but honestly, it is the one. It is the lean in, be okay, not being okay.
Yeah.
Right. Because it is temporary. Most things are temporary. Particularly for women who are struggling with, difficult cycles, perimenopause, menopause, postnatal things. It's temporary. And make sure you have a good support system at the end of the day. And knowledge and awareness are power.
Yeah, I love it. Well, thank you so much, Kristen. Where can people find you if they want to reach out or learn more about you and your practice?
Yeah. So I'm in the Los Angeles area. Baird Integrative Therapy. .com is the name of my practice. I have several clinicians working with me. Again, we do specialize in the neurodivergent individual, children, teens. I myself focus on adults, primarily women over 40. And I published a book on adult ADHD, a workbook a couple years ago. God, even I'm blanking at the title of my book.
No worries.
The CBT workbook for adult ADHD.
There you go. And I'll put all this
on
in
Amazon.
The show. I'll put it on the show and all in the show notes too.
And, you know, I work with anyone in California. We do in-person and telehealth. I work with people in Europe and in Australia for telehealth. So yeah, I mean, that is, we're here. Our door's
Great.
open.
All right. Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks again, Kristen. I
Thank
really
you, Hannah.
appreciate your time and your knowledge and your candid discussion about this, because that's how we have to talk about it, right?
Yes.
Just normalize it, normalize the conversation. And thank you to everyone who's listening, especially if you are a man.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
Hopefully you learned some.
Yes. Yes. And that's our show for today. Thank you for taking time out of your day to listen. This is the last episode of 2025. We're taking a break until January to spend time with our families and friends. Thank you so much for listening this year. We really appreciate you. My main takeaway from today's episode is that knowledge about the female body plus awareness of your own experience equals power. When you understand what's happening in your brain and body, you can make better decisions, advocate for yourself, and build a support system that actually works, especially when things feel uncomfortable, which is kind of all the time. And don't forget, perimenopause and menopause amplify ADHD in ways that can feel destabilizing. We may be tempted to push through alone, but as Kristen said, lean into that discomfort and get curious about what's happening in your body and ask for help. There is something you can do about it. As always, this podcast is just a stop on your journey. It is not a substitute for medical or mental health advice. If you are struggling with ADHD or you think you might have it, or if you're like me and you're wondering why things have gotten so much harder as you age, please reach out to a professional for additional support. And if you have any thoughts on today's episode, I'd love to hear from you at podcast@beyondbooksmart.com. And you can also find me on LinkedIn. Just search for Hannah Choi. And thank you so much for helping us spread the word about executive function skills. When you share or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, it really does make a difference for us. All right, that's it for today. Thanks for listening, and Happy New Year.